got into a discussion about people who are osik b'tzarchei tzibur. And the Mishnah writes that someone who's osik b'tzarchei tzibur, somebody who dedicates their lives to helping out the klal, to helping out the public, is somebody who should do so l'shem shamayim, and should have the proper attitude in doing so. So much so that the Gemara writes in Maseches Horius that when talking about somebody who takes a position of leadership, the Gemara says that you got it all wrong. Kimedumam atem shesrara aninosan lachem. You mistakenly thought that when you take a position of authority in the community, that this is something of a status, of a symbol, some kind of prominence that you were given. It's a mistake. Avdus aninosan lachem. It's a burden, it's a responsibility, it's a duty that you have once you've been put into such a position. And that really frames the whole way that we need to think about somebody who's osek b'tzarchei tzibur and how they need to go about doing so. So we look at a medrash tanchuma. And I've always found this medrash to be an extremely compelling medrash. Let's read it together. It's in Parshas Mishpatim. It's in Parshas Mishpatim because there the Torah is talking about Eilah HaMishpatim Ashetasim Lifnehem, that we have an obligation to set up a judicial system. We have an obligation to have judges, to have people who are responsible, who are looking out for the community, who are making sure the community is safe. Eilah HaMishpatim begins with all of those laws. And here the Medrash comments on the following. We have a pasuk in Sefer Mishlei, V'ish trumos yeharsena. And if you have a person, trumos means something that is separated. If you have a person who is separated, yeharsena, he will destroy it. Now what is that a reference to? Anyone who doesn't have a sheet, there are plenty on the bima. Ish trumos yeharsena means the following. Imesim adam atzmo kitruma hazeh, writes the Medrash. If a person considers themselves like a truma, that is detached, that is removed, Shemushlechas bezavius habayis, that is isolated, that is secluded from the rest of the home. V'omer, and he says to himself, Ma li b'toreach hatzibur, I'm going to separate myself, I'm going to isolate myself, I don't want to be so involved. Ma li b'toreach hatzibur, what, I need to be involved in the tzibur for what? I need to be a shul president to deal with everyone's bickering and everyone's complaints and everyone's squabbles and all the disputes and all the issues people have, and I want to be on this committee and that committee. What do I need it for? Mali b'toreach hatzibur. Mali b'dineihem. What, I'm going to go be a dayan? I'm going to go adjudicate cases in the Jewish community and deal with people's silliness? This is what I need to do with my life? Mali l'shma kolam. Shalom alecha nafshi. You can all have a nice life and deal. It's exactly what this phrase actually means. Shalom alecha nafshi. You should go have a nice life. I'll live my life being happy. You live your lives figuring out all of your politics and all your problems. I don't want to be involved. If a person says that, writes the Medrash, Harezem Machriv Es Ha'olam. That's a powerful statement. Harezem Machriv Es Ha'olam. You are someone who is tantamount to destroying the world. Maisa B'Ravasi. And then the Medrash tells us a story about one of the great Amoraim, Ravasi. Kishahayim Mistalek Min Ha'olam. When he was on his deathbed and he was leaving the world, Nichnas ben Achoso Etzlo, so there were many visitors who were coming to say their last final goodbyes to him. So his niece comes in, and Matsu Boches, she saw that her uncle was crying. Amar Lei, so she says to him, Rebbe, Mipnei Atamoche, you know, you're my uncle, but you're also my teacher. Why are you crying? What are you so distraught about? Yesh Torah Shalo Lamadata, do you think that there is Torah that you could have learned that you didn't? You dedicated your whole life to this effort. You've been giving all you've had. What are you concerned about? How will you tell me? Decha Yoshim Lefanecha. Look, you have a whole students. You have all of these students who are now teachers of Torah, who you impacted, who you influenced. They are going to perpetuate your legacy. What are you concerned about? So that can't be it. That can't be the reason why you're crying. Yesh Gemilas Chasadim Shelo Asisa. Maybe the reason why you're distraught is because you should have been more involved in Gemilas Chasadim and you realize I wasn't as forthcoming for people. And maybe that's what you're concerned about. I'll call Mido Shahayu Bacha. Hayusa Mistrachik Min Adinim. He says, Uncle, I know that you were always careful never to get involved. Lo Nasata Rashus Alatzmacha Leismanos Alzarchit Sibur. Many times in your life, you were asked to take a position of leadership. You were asked to do different things on behalf of the community. And you never did. You refused. You dismissed it. You declined. Why? Because you never wanted to take that kind of position over other people. Not that you didn't get involved, but you chose not to take the position. Amar Leh, he says back, Bani, Aleha Ani Boche. That's what I regret. That's exactly what I regret. That I was offered positions of leadership throughout my life, in the community. I had the opportunity to impact people in such a profound way, and I chose not to. That's what makes me distraught. Shema etein din v'cheshbon. Al ha'yisi yachal lasos dineim shel Yisrael. I could have done something to help the Jewish community at large, and I chose not to. So did I teach my students? Yes. Did I run a yeshiva and a kolel and influence all of them to then be influencers? Yes. But did I take the responsibility upon myself when I was asked to do so? No. And although I had every good intention in declining those offers, although I felt I was declining because I didn't want to be on top of other people, but he says it was a mistake. It was a mistake because those are opportunities to really have an ability to impact in such a profound way. Look at the Or HaChaim HaKadosh in the beginning of Parshas Vezos HaBracha. So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We're only up to Parshas Ekev, but Vezos HaBracha is coming right around the corner. So Vezos HaBracha opens up. Vezos HaBracha asher berach Moshe ish Elokim es b'nei Yisrael. As we know, Vezos HaBracha is right before Moshe Rabbeinu passes away. And the Torah describes Moshe Rabbeinu as Zos HaBracha asher berach Moshe. How is he referred? Ish Elokim. He is the man of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, es b'nei Yisrael. These are the words that he shared with the Jewish people. Writes the Or HaChaim HaKadosh on Chumash, v'niskavein hakasav b'smichus es b'nei Yisrael. It's intentional that the description of Moshe Rabbeinu is, number one, he's Isha Elokim, and right next to that it says, he was involved with b'nei Yisrael. Because he says, in Isha Elokim lahagid shemadrega zu hisiga. The way that he achieved, the way that he accomplished this ability to become the Isha Elokim, the man of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was only in B'nai Yisrael. It's only because he gave over his life to the Jewish people. It's because he lived a selfless life, because he understood there's something much larger than himself. There was an opportunity for him to take responsibility and to run with it. That is what brought him to the point of becoming an Isha Elokim. Because that is the highest level, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that a person can reach. Think back to the story of the Esar Makos in Mitzrayim. Paro, as the leader of the nation, is haggling, he's negotiating with Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's back and forth. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling him exactly what's going to happen. And he outlines each of the Makos, and he says, look, if nothing changes, if the status quo remains, this is what's going to happen. And every time, that is exactly what transpires. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu is trying his best to negotiate with Paro to allow the Jewish people to go free. Along comes Makas Dam, devastating Makkah. Paro asks Moshe Rabbeinu to get rid of it. Right after it's gone, Paro goes right back to everything that was happening before. Along comes Makas Tzvardeya. A staggering Makkah. Paralyzing. Imagine. You know, I find it a nuisance when I'm in the kitchen and there's a fly flying around. Imagine you have frogs jumping in and out of all of your pots, jumping in and out of everything, out of your refrigerator, into your ovens. I mean, it's ridiculous. A paralyzing Makkah, devastating Makkah. And with all of that, listen to the way Paro negotiates with Moshe Rabbeinu to purge the society of this horrific calamity that was befalling them. Listen what he says. Vayomer. Ha'atiru al Hashem. He asked Moshe Rabbeinu, I sincerely ask you to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yaser ha'tzvardim, and I hope that he will withdraw, that he will take away all the tzvardeya, all the frogs from our community, mimeni u'me'ami. I hope that he will take away the tzvardeya, mimeni u'me'ami. Think carefully about what that is. You have millions of people who are living an irritated lifestyle, who are roiling in pain, and you have an egocentric, narcissistic personality who is so self-absorbed that the only thing he could think about is mimeni. Oh, and by the way, I'm so annoyed by what I see, but I also have a country of a couple of million people here. You know what? Why don't we take care of them also? That's the problem of leadership when it all goes wrong. That's what happens when somebody abuses their position of leadership and doesn't realize you're not here, lo svara ani ela avdus. This is not a position where you should feel as if you have a status, but rather you have a responsibility. You have a duty. There's an understanding that's there of the burden that you carry of the people. In fact, the Gemara says, melech shemachal al kavodo. If you have, for example, the Gemara contrasts, a parent who tells the child, you know what, I don't expect you to be mechabed me. I don't expect you to drop your schedule right now and come visit me. whatever, I don't need it. I talk to you, I FaceTime, it's okay. You don't have to drop everything else. There's never been a parent in the history of the world who said such a thing. But imagine a parent would say, I don't need you to go out of your way. I'm mochel on my kavod. Imagine a parent would say such a thing. Says the Gemara, a parent has a right to say such a thing. It's my kavod that I am deserving of by my children because of everything I've infused in them. If I choose to overlook that, if I choose to dismiss that and say that my children don't have to worry about it, then that's my prerogative. I have a right to do that. On the other hand, says the Gemara, if a melech, if a king decides to be mochel on his covenant, he says, you know, I'm just like everybody else. You should treat me like everyone else. I don't want to be called, you know, any fancy titles. I don't want to be given any respect, any honor. I want to just live like everyone else. The Gemara says, ein kavod mochel. He does not have a right to make that decision. Why not? It's the kavod that's deserving of him. The answer, says the Rishonim, is because kavodo is kavoda am. The respect, the honor that we give you is not because we think that you're so wonderful. It's rather because you represent all of us. It's because you represent our nation. You represent our people. So even if you feel personally that you don't need all this respect, it's not up to you to be mochel. It's the community that you represent. It's the community that you are the leader of. And that is what we're showing respect toward. And therefore the Gemara says, Melech shemochel al kavodo, ein kavodo mochel, because that is the job of a melech. You compare what we just said about Paro, where he puts himself, v'haser atzvardim mimeni umeami. Think about the inverse of that. Compare that with the absolutely mind-blowing story, the demand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes of Moshe Rabbeinu. Look here, number gimel. Moshe Rabbeinu is told in Sefer Bamidbar to go and fight Milchemes Midian. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him he wants him to take revenge. Nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'eis ha-Midyanim. I want the Jewish people, for whatever reason, to retaliate, to vindicate the Midianim. They are not going to get away with what they just did. We're going to go after them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's your job to lead the Jewish people in battle against the nation of Midian. What are the next words in the pasuk? Achar te'aseif el amecha. Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to know, this is your last job I'm giving you. You need to lead the Jewish people in battle. You need to make sure they're victorious against Midian. Achar te'aseif el amecha. This is your final engagement of any experience on this earth. You're going to die after. This is it. Well, that's a frightening demand to make of someone. Go do this, and the minute you're finished, you're fired. Imagine if you have somebody who runs a law firm, and he tells one of his junior associates, okay, I need you to do this job. The minute you're finished, we're firing you. He's going to say, I'm leaving now. I'm not going to do all this work. I'm not interested. Who wants to invest in themselves to then be fired? Forgetting about being fired, take that 10 steps forward and say, how about if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, do this job, and then we're going to take your life. Not just we're going to fire you. Not just you're going to be demoted. You're going to die. That's it. Well, says Rashi, Afal pi sheshama shemisaso tuli bedavar. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu heard, and he was told very explicitly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that his life was dependent on this, that the end of his life was going to be conditioned on this fight with Midian, Asa b'simcha v'lo icher. Moshe Rabbeinu put himself behind the Jewish people and he said, listen, if this is what the Jewish people need to do to get to their destiny, I will not delay, I'm not going to postpone, I'm not going to withhold their ability to get to where they need to get to. I'm just one person. My job is to be here for the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu does it without any hesitation, without any concern. What an amazing tribute to what it really means to be an Oseik B'Tzarchei Tzibur, to be a person who gives of himself and puts himself behind the needs of the Tzibur. The Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk, was one of the great, great Gedolim before the war. He has an absolutely astounding insight where he examines the life, he compares, he contrasts the lives of Moshe Rabbeinu and Noach. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before, but I find it extremely fascinating. So one of the most staggering dramas that we have in all of Chumash is in Parshas Kisisa, where you have enormous hysteria and panic in the Jewish community. Why? Because a nation found itself without a leader. Moshe Rabbeinu told them he was going to come back. Suddenly he doesn't return. It turns out the calculation was off. They made a mistake. He, whatever it was. But people thought that they're rudderless. People thought, we don't have a leader anymore. And it threw the entire community into a sense of confusion. Nobody knew what to do. They went so far as to create an alternative religion. And as we know, they make the Egel Hazav. And it's shocking when you think about it. just a few weeks prior, they were standing at Har Sinai. They heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicate with them directly. And yet with all of that, very much in the rearview mirror, but so much a part of their essence and who they are, now when Moshe Rabbeinu is gone, nobody knows what to do. At some point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu convinces Moshe Rabbeinu, it's time for you to descend. You need to go down. Ki shicheis amcha, your people have gone completely astray. I don't know what's going to be. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. He surveys the tragic scene. He looks around and in his ire, he smashes the luchos. And he condemns, he criticizes the Jewish people. He listens as HaKadosh Baruch Hu threatens to destroy this once beloved nation. V'hine, am kishe oref hu. Pasuk says, a very accurate description, we are a stubborn, obstinate nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, v'ata hanichali, v'yichar api bahem v'achaleim. Just get out of my way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Let me destroy them. Enough is enough. How could it be? I took them out of Mitzrayim. I did all the Makos, Kriyas, Yamsev. I brought them to Kabbalah, Satorah. I spoke to them. I communicated with them. I gave them the Torah. I did everything that one can ever ask for. And yet, I'm Kshei Oref. Look at this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, just let me be. Just let me destroy them. Ve'ese oschala goy gadol, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't worry. I'm not going to leave you with nothing. All the future generations of all of Jewish history, all of Jewish destiny will start today. With you. You're going to be the focal point from this time and on. We're not going to talk any longer about anyone else because the entire Jewish people will begin from you. I'm going to destroy everybody else. Moshe Rabbeinu begs for forgiveness. He asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reestablish this shattered relationship that he has with the Jewish people. And I find it amusing. Amusing that the Medrash draws a comparison between two iconic leaders in Jewish history, as we mentioned. The Medrash writes, we had Noach on the one hand, who was the leader of his generation, and we have Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the leader of his generation. Noach, the Medrash refers to as the Raya Shatya, which is Aramaic phrase, which basically in Hebrew would mean the Roeh HaTipesh, which means the foolish and ill-advised leader. Whereas Moshe goes down in history as the Raya Mehemna, which means the Roeh HaNe'eman, the one who is the faithful, the loyal, and devoted Jewish leader to his people. So listen to the way the Medrash formulates this disparity between Noach and Moshe Rabbeinu. Ma heishiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Noach kishayatzah min ha'teva. Noach has this otherworldly experience. He sees the entire world is being destroyed. God instructs him to go into a teva to save his life. That's what he does. Comes out of the teva, he sees the entire world is gone, and he's looking at this carnage. V'yamar lo, and he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, Ribono shel Olam, Nikreis Rachum, you refer to yourself as a compassionate God? Hayelecha l'rachem al b'riyos secha. Why were you not sympathetic for the world you just destroyed? How did you allow this to happen? How can you call yourself a Rachum? There's no Rachmanus there. That was the question of Noach immediately after seeing the carnage that the Mabul brought to the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to him and he says, Raya Shatya, you fool. You're a foolish leader. Achshav ata omer lizeh? Now you're asking me this question? How about for all those years that I told you, Hinani mevi Mabul al ha'aretz, I'm about to destroy the world, and you said nothing. You didn't care. You never once negotiated. You never once asked a question. You never challenged me. Now that you see what happened, now you start asking questions, now it's too late. Contrast that, says the Medrash, with Moshe Rabbeinu, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to destroy the Jewish people and I'm going to start over from you. It's all going to be about you. You're going to come out being the hero. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, im ayin mecheni na misifrecha. Life is not worth living without my people. I am nothing without my people. That, says the Medrash, is the contrast between Moshe Rabbeinu and Noach. Now the Meshech Chachma takes it a step further and he says, Moshe Rabbeinu's entire life mission and purpose was to be misaking, to repair, to reconstruct all that went wrong, all that was so deeply flawed and lacking in the lifetime of Noach so many years before him. It is no coincidence, says the Meshech Chachma, that Noach waited 120 years before the destruction of the world occurred. And Moshe also lives a life of Meya Ve'esrim Shana, of 120 years. And this time, the 120 years was to be dedicated to suppressing devastation and destruction from coming to a nation. How striking that Moshe Rabbeinu's choice of words when he's negotiating in Parshas Kisisa is Mecheni Na Misifrecha. Mecheni, writes the Meshech Chachma, is Milashon Mei Noach. Mecheni is the same words as Mei Noach, because his job in life, his aspiration was to do everything that Noach failed to do, to be there for his people. While Noach did nothing to save them, Moshe Rabbeinu stands up and he says, No, I'm remembering Mei Noach, and therefore, Mecheni Na Misifrecha, destroy me, don't destroy the people. Because the people are everything. It's not about me, it's about the people. Noach is first described in the Torah as an Ish Tzadik Tamim Hayo B'dorosav. The Medrash says he starts off his life being a righteous person. God said about him that he was righteous. He was an Ish Tzadik. And yet, in the end of the story of the Mabul, Noach comes out and he's referred to as Vayachel Noach Isha Adama. Noach became an earthly, non-spiritual being. He's an Isha Adama, a regular person, living his own life. Contrast that, says the Medrash, with Moshe Rabbeinu, who begins his life as an Ish Mitzri. As we're told, Moshe Rabbeinu is living in the palace of Paro. He then becomes a fugitive. He's running away. They refer to him as an Ish Mitzri, as an Egyptian, a man who is fully immersed in the Egyptian culture. And yet, later on, at the end of his life, he's referred to as Isha Elokim. Moshe Rabbeinu becomes, throughout the experiences of his life, a man of God. He starts from being an Isha Adama, an Ish Mitzri, and he goes in the opposite direction from Noach. Noach starts as an Ish Tzadik, and everything goes downhill. Moshe Rabbeinu starts as an Ish Mitzri, as a regular person like everyone else, and ends up, through the experiences of his life, becoming an Isha Elokim. How is that? Because he decided to live his life where he made a choice. Am I going to be self-absorbed? Am I going to be inward-looking all the time, which is an Isha Adama, a person who only focuses on the physical, on everything that they have in their life or don't have? Is that the primary focus of my life? Or will Moshe Rabbeinu choose to live his life a different way, where he'll understand that his job is to live an elevated lifestyle where he'll be compassionate and considerate and caring and understanding of other people, and knowing that his job in life and his mission is to provide for others and to provide comfort for them and to make their lives just a little bit more enhanced than it otherwise would have been without him? That's what it means to live a life starting as an Ish Mitzri, as all of us do. We are all born into regular families. We're all born to regular people. And we have the ability to make that choice, to either live out our lives and become elevated as an Isha Elokim, or to live out our lives and remain in Isha Adama, as Noach did. And that is what leadership really means. That is what the understanding of the Chazal and the Medrash is all about. What does it mean to be in a position of power, a position of influence, a position where you have the ability to take responsibility upon yourself, to recognize the duty and the mission and the burden that you carry? It's not about you, it's about the people that you represent, it's about the people who you lead. So being involved in community comes with a tremendous amount of self-sacrifice. And sometimes, it even, surprisingly, encroaches into our ability in spiritual life. Someone who can't master as much Torah as they otherwise would have wanted to because they're involved in Sarfei Tzibur. Look at the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm sure he would have liked to sequester himself, to cut himself off, to live his own life, studying with HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'chavrusa all day, but he didn't. Why? Because he wanted to become the Isha Elokim, and the only way that happened was because he involved himself, because he was fully engaged in the understanding of what the community wanted him to do for them. So you look at a very beautiful comment of the Rambam. The Rambam comments on our Mishnah that we're learning now. Let's see in number Dalet. The Mishnah says, V'chol ha'amelim im hatzibur, anyone who dedicates themselves to the community, yiyu amelim l'shem shamayim. All of their efforts should be l'shem shamayim. And the Mishnah then continues, Tzidkasam ametis la'ad v'atem. The end of the Mishnah is, and all of you who are involved, Male ani aleichem ki ilu asisem. That's a very curious phrase. What does it mean? I consider it as if you have done. I am doing. What do you mean I consider as if I have done? I'm sacrificing myself. I'm giving up my life. I'm involved in the Chever Kadisha. I'm doing the Bikur Cholam. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. So what do you mean I consider it as if you have done? Explains the Rambam so beautifully. Hu dvar Hashem le'osam ha'amelim imatzibur. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to the people who've dedicated their lives to such an ideal. Shepa'amim yimnu milasos mitzvah biglal iskam b'tzarchei hatzibur. Sometimes that person is unable to be involved in a mitzvah because they're so busy with tzarchei tzibur. I remember there was a certain rabbi who I've seen on many occasions, used to walk in every Erev Shabbos into shul with wet hair. I always thought it was so strange. You couldn't start taking your shower 10 minutes before you started this week? Okay, you were in a rush 1 week. Every single week, literally came to shul every week with wet hair, and I was wondering, what's that all about? I finally had the gumption to ask, what is this all about? And he told me, you know how many almanas in our shul I need to call on Erev Shabbos? Who's calling them on Erev Shabbos? And who's taking care of all the people who are in the hospital and making sure they have everything they need? It's not anyone here. Don't start speculating. But it was such a renewed perspective for me. Yeah, so I only have a few minutes left till Shabbos, and I realize, okay, if I don't shower now, it's just not going to happen. So I jump in the shower, I run to shul. But Friday afternoon, I'm busy with the things that I'm supposed to be busy with. I'm taking care of the people, which is what I'm supposed to be doing. And sometimes, as somebody who's osek b'tzarchei tzibur, you don't have the ability to do mitzvahs the way other people do. You know, sometimes, yes, it would be a beautiful thing if we would be able to be ready for Shabbos at 12 o'clock in the afternoon and sit with our feet up, with our Shabbos clothing on already, and all ready to go, and come to shul a half hour early and say Shir HaShirim. It's all wonderful, but sometimes because a person is... Sometimes you're not that for other reasons, just because you're disorganized. But sometimes you're not that because you're involved in other things, because you're looking out for people's needs. And as a result of that, I lose out on my ability to keep Shabbos in a way that I would feel is very meaningful to me. Writes the Rambam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to you, you don't have the ability to observe mitzvahs, to be spiritually involved the way you wanted to, the way you dreamed, the way you imagined, because you've given yourself over to the klal. Lefika Hamar, therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in this Mishnah, Va'atem mala ani aleichem ki'ilu asisem. And I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, consider it as if you've kept Shabbos in the optimal way. And I've considered it as if you've done everything the way you're supposed to. Ah, you didn't have the ability to do that. You didn't have the ability to focus on your own spirituality. Maybe you missed a minyan here or there because you were busy on a hatzalah call, because you're a doctor or a nurse and you're running out to take care of someone. Don't feel bad about it. Mala ani akasav ki'ilu asisa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, your job, your aspiration in life is to be there for other people, not to daven to me. Davening to me is a wonderful thing. Shaking my lulav and esrog, sitting in my sukkah, keeping my Shabbos is all great. But if your priority right now is to be osek b'tzarchei tzibur, that's exactly what you should be doing. That's what people need. Chasam Sofer, one of the great gedolim in the 1800s, actually writes about this in a tshuva. And it's a fascinating discussion where he says, in essence, you have to ask yourself, the Gemara tells us, let's say a person is traveling and they only have one bottle of water, but they're traveling with a friend and you're in a desert and you're lost, Rahmana Litzlam, and there's no way you're ever going to get out alive with one bottle of water. So either we're going to split the bottle of water and both of us are going to die, or I'll keep my bottle of water, I was responsible, and at least I'll get out alive. It will be a tragedy to see my friend lose his life that way. But these are discussions that the Gemara has. And the Gemara comes to the very clear conclusion, which is, Chayecha kodmin l'chayecha vercha. Of course, we always try to look out for other people. But at the same time, when there's a trade-off that needs to be made, either I'm going to live or he's going to live, either it's going to be me or him. Obviously, I'm not allowed to actively kill somebody else. But if it's a choice like this one, where I have the ability to save myself or to save no one, and both of us are going to die, or to save him, am I obligated to make sure that his life is saved over mine? Says the Gemara, no. Chayecha kodmin l'chayecha vercha. Your life comes first. Your life takes precedence. It's the most important thing. Well, ask the Chasam Sofer, if that's true, how do you understand somebody who's osik b'tzarchei tzibur? That means my life is secondary to other people's lives. That means every Sunday in this shul, I will not be able to go swimming with my children because I'm going to someone's wedding. Right? Which is a pleasure. At least it's a wedding and not a levaya. But yes, I'm not putting my life first. And I don't have the ability to show up to every one of my children's events in school. And I don't have the ability to go on vacations the way many other people in our community go. And I don't have the ability to enjoy life the way some people enjoy life. Why? Because I have a responsibility. As a result of that, I can't do certain things. So you ask yourself, what does that mean? Doesn't the Torah say we have a very clear set of principles, which is Chayecha Kodmin? Now don't get me wrong, I don't regret it for one second. I enjoy every day of my life and everything that I've been entrusted to do for this community. I feel privileged to be a part of the leadership of this community and don't regret it at all. But when you think about it, when you break it down, there's tremendous self-sacrifice and there are certain things that I'm not going to be able to do in my life that everybody else can. So why is that? Ask the Chasam Sofer, it goes against the general principle, which is Chayecha Kodmin, my life comes first. If my life comes first, why am I sacrificing parts of my life for the community? Let's read the Chasam Sofer together. Chasam Sofer writes in a Sefer on Chumash, Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. We have a halacha which was told to us by Rabbi Akiva. And what is the phrase? Anybody know how it ends off? Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. So, we generally translate that to mean, V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is a very essential principle of being a Jew. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Says the Chasam Sofer, no. Of course, V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is very important. But we knew that. Without Rabbi Akiva, we all knew that already. We didn't need Rabbi Akiva to come and tell us, V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is very important. We know Ben Adam L'Chaveru is extremely critical to being a good Jew and living a good Jewish life. So what does he mean, Zeh klal gadol b'Torah? Let's see. He explains as follows. Ha dechayecha kodmin. This halacha that we know that governs every other area of our lives, that my life comes before others. Hainu b'inyanei olam hazeh. That's talking about the case that the Gemara describes when I'm walking in a desert, I only have one bottle of water, and the choice is going to be either I'm going to give it to my friend and he'll survive, or I'll keep it for myself and I'll survive. There the Gemara says, chayecha kodmin. My life comes first. When we're talking about physical life. Aval b'chayi ha-nitzchi, says the Chasam Sofer. When we're talking about spiritual life, haynu b'limud ha-Torah, chayiv l'lamid acherim, afilu hu mevatel atzmo milimudo. It means, I have an obligation to teach Torah, even when it's at the self-sacrifice of my own ability to become a great Torah scholar. Even though, I'm going to have to lose out myself. Mikal makom, he says, Rabbi Akiva teaches us, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. What it means is, this is the rule when it comes to spiritual matters. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. When you're living life, you don't think this way. Physical life, we say, my life comes before others. When we're talking about spiritual life, I have to put other people first. B'limud ha-Torah dafka. To be inin limud ha-Torah hu klal gadol leov chavercha kamocha. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha means zeh klal gadol b'Torah. When it's talking about spiritual matters and I have the ability either to push myself forward spiritually or to help encourage others and inspire them to move forward spiritually, my obligation is to help other people first. I've gone the last couple of years to the Siyum of Rabbi Yoni Levin in Eish Kodesh. He makes a Siyum every year after Simchas Torah on all of Shas. So he learns 7 daf a day every year. I'm sure it's a tremendous amount of hard work. And every time I go, I think I was at his 10th, if I'm not mistaken, last year, which is a phenomenal accomplishment for those who may not be understanding of what that is. Every time that I go, I feel such a chalishos hadas. I've never finished Shas. I don't know that I'll ever have time to finish Shas either, because I'm busy doing the things I do. And it's a dream and it's an aspiration that he obviously has. And I've always been, I could say, jealous. Yes, I am jealous that he finished us 10 times over the last 10 years. Yes, it bothers me. It doesn't bother me that he did it. It bothers me that I haven't. And I'm extremely jealous of him. until the last siyum that we went to. Rabbi Weinberger spoke. It was in Eish Kodesh. And Rabbi Weinberger got up at the beginning of his speech and he said, "You know, Rabbi Yoni, this is so special." And he said, "The problem is that because it's so special, we think that this is like normal. So every year after Simchas Torah, an email goes out, Yoni Levin's going to make a Siyum HaShas." Everyone's like, "Oh, very nice, we're going to come." People don't realize that this is a tremendous commitment that he's taken upon himself. So Rabbi Weinberger was talking about that, and then he said, "But I give you a bracha. Next year, you should be so busy with the Kehillah, you shouldn't have time for this." And I said, "How sad is that? What do you mean you shouldn't have time for this?" Then I was thinking about it. No, that's a beautiful bracha. Because somebody who has the ability to inspire other people, somebody who has the ability to teach and the ability to give and the ability to uplift others, doesn't have a right to set himself apart and learn all of Shas just because that's what I want to do. And I thought that that was the most beautiful bracha to give someone. You finish this 10 times and lucky you that you have time for this. But I hope next year you won't have time. Why? Because I hope next year your time will be used up by the Kehillah for what you're good at, for what you should be doing. And I thought it was really meaningful. It calmed my fears a little bit. That at least I hope I'm spending my time doing other things and not wasting it. But this is really what the Megillah tells us in the end of Megillah Esther number Vav here. Imagine at the very end of the story, Mordechai is the undisputed hero of the Jewish people. Look what happened. They all would have lost their lives if not for Mordechai. He devises the plan. He tells Esther exactly what to do. After all is said and done, you would think this person would be the most celebrated Jew in the entire community. They would parade him around to everywhere to celebrate him, honor him at every dinner, give him all the plaques, all everything. But no, what happens? Read the last pasuk in the Megillah. Ki Mordechai ha-Yehudi mishne la-melech Achashverosh. Mordechai was the second in command to Achashverosh. V'gadol ha-Yehudim, he was very much celebrated by the Jewish people. V'ratzui l'rov echav. And most of the people liked him. Ask the Gemara, most of the people liked him? Which Jew did not like him? He just saved your life. So who disagreed with him? Says the Gemara, l'rov echav v'lo l'chal echav. Which one of his Jewish brothers did not appreciate him? Says the Gemara, melamed shepir shemimenu miktas ha-Sanhedrin. Some of his colleagues, some of the greatest leaders at the time, separated from him and decided, we're not so excited about him. Not excited about Mordechai? What happened? Rashi explains, kiven she'asak b'sarara, because once Mordechai got involved in Tzarchei Tzibur and gave his life over to be the Jewish politician, which is what was needed at the time, shachach milimudo. Well, he wasn't able to be at the cutting edge of halacha anymore. He's not learning anymore. So we can't include him in the halachic discussions in the Beis Medrash. And when a shaila comes up in the community, we can't turn to him anymore because he's out of touch. He's not learning. So Mordechai is not learning. And some of the members of the community turn away from him as a result. I ask you a few thousand years later, so who was right? Do you know anybody by name who lived at that time other than Mordechai and Esther? Ever heard of any rabbi who lived then? Any communal leader? Anybody who influenced anything? Anybody who was on any committee? Anybody who ran the Chevra Kadisha? Anyone who was the gabbai of the shul? No. So history has shown that Mordechai was right. And although it came at a tremendous price, personal price to him, and he lost his status in the community, and his friends didn't respect him, but we, thousands of years later, realize that he was right. And that's what all of us take out of the story of Mordechai and Esther. So there's a very interesting tshuva that one of the contemporary Svarim has where he discusses there was a principal of a school in Chutz La'aretz somewhere, he doesn't write exactly where it was, who wanted to make Aliyah. He wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. He felt, you know, it will be better for my family spiritually to live in Eretz Yisrael. I have to say, I'm giving the shiur here this morning. At 10:30 I have to speak for the NCSY boys. At 11:15 I have to speak for the NCSY girls. So it's all wonderful. But because of that, which I'm pleased to be teaching Torah this morning, because of that I'm unable to be in the airport when Nefesh B'Nefesh's flight is about to go off. We have a number of members of our community who are making Aliyah this morning. and it's a very exciting time. I've been to many, many of the send-offs before. I've been to many of the arrivals in Eretz Yisrael as well. I wish I could be there this morning, and I encourage anybody who has the ability to go, should go, and just wish them well. It's extremely moving, and it's very, very, again, something else I'm jealous of, I guess I can say. You're all going to think I'm a very jealous person, but I think I've just given off my secrets. These are the two things that I'm very jealous of. Yoni Levin, Siyam HaShas every year, and those who move to Eretz Yisrael. Outside of that, I'm a happy guy. So the tshuva is that here you had a principal who really wanted to make Aliyah. And he felt that it was going to be spiritually better for his family to live in Eretz Yisrael, which that's the estimation that he made. Now the question is, if I leave the school, who's going to take over? They don't have anyone qualified. So if you live in New York or New Jersey where there are Jewish people all around, it's one thing. Just a couple of months ago, I was in Australia. I've spoken about it. They don't have a rabbi. The rabbi made Aliyah. They're not going to find one anytime soon easily. It's very hard. They don't have so many qualified people who are naturally homegrown who can take over the position. They need to bring someone in from outside, from wherever it is, someone who's going to understand and appreciate the culture. So the question is, does a rabbi or a principal or a person in a position of leadership where they are effectively inspiring the community, wants to make Aliyah for good reasons, not to run away, but because they want to elevate their family standard, they want to live in Eretz Yisrael. Do I have a right to do that at the expense of the community? Fascinating shayla. Fascinating shayla. And the answer that's given is, you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, where the Rambam talks about the following halacha. What happens if a Kohen is in the middle of an avodah? Kohen is in the middle of sacrificing a korban in the Beis HaMikdash, and somebody runs in and says, "Hey, I'm sorry, I just want to let you know, your mother has just passed away, your father just passed away, you better go and take care of it." And he says, "I don't know what to do, I'm in the middle of something here." Now, the halacha is, let's make it clear, he's not allowed to do avodah while he's in aninus. He has to stop immediately. But yet the Rambam writes, he's not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash to go tend to the funeral until he finds someone to take over his job. Amazing. The Rambam says, although he's not allowed to do the job himself, he has to stop right away. He's an onen. An onen, we say, life stops for you. Not allowed to do a mitzvah. But yet the Rambam says, don't you dare leave the Beis HaMikdash till you have someone to take over that responsibility. And the Ravid says, why? The Ravid says, he can't work anyway, so let him just drop what he's doing and walk out. The Kesef Mishra there explains, because you have a responsibility. If you can't do it, it's your job to make sure that it's done. It doesn't matter that you have a personal issue going on. Yes, you're very distraught, you lost your father, you lost your mother, we understand that. But you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to the people. And you can't just walk away. You need to set up a system where somebody's going to stand in your place and take over that sense of duty and responsibility that you once had. And I find that to be a remarkable comment of the Rambam, very much a part of this discussion. It's well known that in 1943, you know, it reminds me, Rav Asher Weiss often tells the story about his father, who was a Holocaust survivor. He was a very special person. And his father, after the war, met up with the Kloisenberger Rebbe. They actually met in the camps. But after the war, the Kloisenberger Rebbe had encouraged him to help out with different things, to set up systems where they can educate children who survived, to go around and bury the dead, and to be involved in all these terribly horrific acts, but were saving the Jewish people. And at one point, he said to the Kloisenberger Rebbe, you know, I lost all of my years in yeshiva because of the war. And I've invested enough of my energy to try to help you. I'm stopping now. I'm going to allow myself to be involved in my own development. And we'll find someone else to bury the dead. I don't need to drive up and down with an American Jeep. I don't know if you know the story, but the Kloisenberger Rebbe actually asked Eisenhower for a Jeep, and he gave him one to drive up and down the camps and bury the Mason. And Rabbi Weiss said, I don't need to be involved in this anymore. It's time for me to get back to my svarim. Time for me to get back to the Beis Medrash. And the Kloisenberger Rebbe said, you think you know what Mesiras Nefesh means? Until now, everything you've done is mesiras haguf. You've expended yourself. That's mesiras haguf. Mesiras nefesh means closing your gemara for the Jewish people. Mesiras nefesh means closing your svarim in order to help the Jewish people. That's mesiras nefesh. Everything you've done till now is mesiras haguf. So there was a harrowing story in 1943 in the Warsaw Ghetto. There were three rabbanim who were left at that point. The greatest of them was Rabbi Nachum Zemba, who is a very famous personality. Rabbi David Kahana Shapiro was the second. And the least well-known was Rav Shimshon Stockheimer, who I don't know much about. But the three of them were in the Warsaw Ghetto. And at one point, there was a message that was sent by the Catholic Church in Warsaw that the three rabbis would be able to get a visa and they'd be able to be taken out of the Warsaw Ghetto. And they were told that they have 1 hour to make a decision whether they want to accept the visas and go along with the Catholic Church's plan, or they were going to stay behind with everyone. And this became a major dilemma. And the three rabbanim came together, and they had a discussion, what they referred to as a din Torah. And they discussed amongst themselves, how far does the responsibility of a communal leader go? How much do we need to ruin our lives and potentially lose our lives for the sake of the community? And in the end, they made the fateful decision that they're not allowed to leave. The three of them all were killed in the Warsaw Ghetto, all because they decided that the community is more important to them than themselves. And that actually happens to be a shiur unto itself, whether or not that was the right decision, wrong decision. The Noda B'Yehuda has a whole tshuva about it in the Chasam Sofer. It discusses back and forth whether it's right or wrong. But the Noda B'Yehuda and the Chasam Sofer were way before the Holocaust. Noda B'Yehuda was in the 1700s, Chasam Sofer was in the 1800s. But these kinds of stories happened many times prior in Jewish history. But it's a big discussion to have. How far must a person push themselves to put themselves behind the Tzarchei HaKlal? So I want to close with one final point, and that is, I read an amazing letter by someone whose name is Yonah Emanuel. Who is Yonah Emanuel? I'm sure nobody here has ever heard of him. I shouldn't say that. Actually, I was talking to someone yesterday, Stewie Wagner, who I mentioned to him that I just read this amazing letter from Yonah Emanuel. And I said, you probably never heard of him. He said, no, I actually had a roommate in Shalavim whose last name was Emanuel. His parents lived in Bayit Vegan, and we used to go for Shabbos all the time. I said, yeah, that was his family. So some people might know who he is. He was a German Jew who was born in 1925. His family during the Holocaust had to relocate a couple of times. Ultimately, they found themselves in the 1940s in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Bayit Vegan. He was very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others, and he wrote a lot. He worked a lot on what used to be German Jewry and the German ethos before everything was destroyed. What did the German community founded by Rav Shamshon and Rafael Hirsch, what did they stand for? And what's lacking now that we don't have it? So he worked a lot on that after his escape from Europe, after he settled in Eretz Yisrael. So he writes that the German community, some of them who survived came to Eretz Yisrael, and he writes that they were faced with a major dilemma because they were all raised on the principles of Torah and Derech Eretz. They were all raised on this ideal that one should focus their energy and attention both on a Torah way of life, but they should also be upstanding citizens who should work and be invested and involved. And he said that was working for all the years, and it was the way that their community ran. And then he said suddenly they came to Eretz Yisrael in the 1940s, and they realized this is just not the style here. This is just not going to work. And they realized that the Haredi system of educating the community was not at all in line with what they were used to. So he said there were some who felt that it is their job to live uncompromising lives, and they have to be absolutely resolute and steadfast that they're going to uphold the values of what German Jewry was, and they're going to build those educational systems, and they're going to recreate the system here in Eretz Yisrael. And there were others who said, look, that obviously was something that was temporary, that was obviously something that was only short-lived, and now that we're in Eretz Yisrael, times have changed, and the values have to change as well, and we're not going to uphold what we once held was the utmost educational experience for our children. Okay, he writes that the German community was infatuated by this issue. And they were fighting and they were arguing, should we build the school, should we not? And everyone was trying to figure out what's the best thing for our children going forward after the war, living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, he writes that unfortunately as a result of that, they were so focused on the education of their children and what the right way of life should be, that they completely ignored some of the other most foundational principles of Jewish life, that were the bedrock of German Jewry in Germany before the war. What was that? He writes the following. He says that he remembers a time when people used to give of themselves l'tzorech haklal. He remembers a time when people lived for the community. There was such a concept, he says, as being involved at every level for the community. So he writes that there was an organized Chevra Kadisha, which is standard in many of our communities. But he says there was an organized everything in town. And everybody got involved. And he says they referred to it as getting involved l'shem mitzvah. That's what everyone did. And he says he remembers on one occasion, he turned to his mother and he said, "How come you're not a part of the Chevra Kadisha?" And his mother said to him, "Well, that's a very good question. But I'd like to let you know that we have a rule in our community that's based on the pasuk, Eim habanim smecha. A mother who's raising children needs to be happy," which is not what the pasuk actually means. But she said, "Eim habanim smecha is the guiding principle. If a mother's not going to be happy, she won't be able to raise a healthy family. And therefore, the rule in our community is that so long as a woman is in her childbearing years and raising young children, she does not volunteer for the Chevra Kadisha because it's going to make her depressed. When I mature, when I get older, when you're out of the house, that's when I'm going to join the Chevra Kadisha." And he ends off his letter saying, the fact that as a child, he asked his mother such a question is so revealing. And he writes, it just shows where the value systems were. And he challenges us to think, Misukani, Im Hayom, today, will our children ask us, why are you not involved in Tzorchei Tzibur? Is that a value that's important to our children? Is that something that they would even think about? Is that something they would even notice? Do our children realize that there are some in the community who take care of the mikveh? There are some in the community who help build schools. There are some in the community who serve on the leadership commissions of every institution and who make sure that everyone is taken care of, and their parents don't. Will our children ask these questions of us, and I should say demand answers from us? Is this a value that we give over to them? And he bemoans the fact that he felt that the life that once was in Germany was something that had an expectation of every adult in the community that they're going to be a giver. You're going to be a contributor in some way. Find your niche. We live in a huge community here. There is so much for us to be busy with. There is so much for us to do. Look around our community and think about how many gemachs we have. I'm not talking about gemachs for borrowing money. There's a bris gemach. It's such a nice, simple idea. But I keep kicking myself. Why didn't I think of that? It's so easy. I don't have room in my basement for a couple of pillowcases, for a bottle of wine. It just helps people. And that family's children know that their parent is involved in Tzorchei Tzibur. And that family's children know that their parent is not just about themselves and is not self-centered and is not completely self-absorbed and is thinking beyond themselves. And the question that he challenges all of us to think about is, are we raising our children in a way where this is something that is important to them? Are we allowing ourselves to realize that this is something that needs to be important to all of us? That this is the kind of life that will enrich our own life experience, not only because we're supposed to be altruistic and we're supposed to be thinking about others, but more importantly because we should be interested in enriching our own experiences of life, and that's the way to do it. And as I read this letter, I was so enthralled because it talks about a time that I feel does not exist, when everything that we encounter today is so much about ourselves. Rabbi Feiner has often pointed out, it's the iPhone and the iPad, and everything's about the I. Everything's me. And it's true. It's no coincidence, because that's what people care about. What am I getting out of it? My wife's grandparents have told me on many occasions that back in the days, Hafter or any of the other local schools. In the middle of the summer, they needed to paint the schools for the next year. And the parents used to come. Anyone here remembers? Parents used to come, thank you. Parents used to come and paint the walls. Imagine Hal sends out an email this week. We need some help painting the walls. I want to know how many Hal parents would actually show up and help to paint the walls without asking, how much are we being paid? And oh, I'm going to do this. And how can it be? What do you mean? I have to go out to dinner with my friends and we're going to the Bahamas next week. How am I going to do this? The answer is you don't care enough. You don't care enough. I don't say you. We, as a community, don't care enough about the tzarchei tzibur that is really supposed to be thrust upon us. This is the responsibility we have. This is the way to live an enriching life. This is the way life used to be. And this is the way we hope our children will take the values. Don't get me wrong, we have so many beautiful enterprises in our community and so much chesed and so much going on. But on an individual level, we need to all ask ourselves, will our children demand answers from us when they ask us, why aren't you involved in the Chevra Kadisha? Why aren't you involved in the school board? Why are you not involved in the community issues? Why are you not stepping up the way some of my friends' parents are? It's a question we need to think about, and it's something that I think has made me think a lot about in general. What's the future of our children's community? What's that going to look like? What's the future of our society going to look like? And what are we doing to make sure that it's going to be going in a positive direction? Wishing everyone a wonderful day.